Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your VHS version of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at The New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at The New York Times.
For Popcast Deluxe, youtube.com/popcast. Like and subscribe. Comment. Maybe we'll respond. The comment section last week was
lively.
Vivid.
People love to argue about Taylor Swift.
I've learned that. Also in the IG Reel and TikTok comments.
Yep.
Also like TikTok.com/PopcastDeluxe. Get involved there on IG, Popcast Deluxe as well. People really get active in the comments, so feel free to go off. In the rear view, the Taylor album. What if it's not bad?
That's not what you said before we started taping.
I'm getting to where I said, but what if it's not bad? I spent a lot of time with it over the last few days, and specifically because one of the things we're going to do this week is our sort of edited version, EP/tight LP, 31 songs down to, at least for me, it's a dozen.
Okay.
And I began to think of the Taylor album a lot like Views.
Mm-hmm. Which is another album that I made an edit of.
Yes. Drake's Views came perhaps at his Imperial era, although we are certainly
still
fully in bigger Imperial era.
Had an anniversary this weekend.
That's right. It was 8 years.
Sure.
Great.
Time flies when you're having views. You know?
It does. I was thinking about that particular moment in Drake and how there was the complaint that there was too much, but there was a complaint about lack of innovation and not the current complaint about lack of topic
innovation. Right, it's funny because we've been having the same
fight every
year for 10 years, basically.
But at that point, it was a little bit sonic innovation was kind of the thing that he was being pummeled for, lack of. And there are songs on that album that maybe they're not peak Drake, but I think in retrospect they sound like they're part of the grammar.
Yeah.
And I think listening to this album 3 or 4 more times, I hear the songs more as part of the grammar. Now, two things. One, I don't think all of the album, like last week we talked about some of the lyrics being deliberately cringe. I think maybe more of the album is in that format than people give credit for, but I don't know if it's as much as could save the whole album.
Okay. And I had a similar thought about Torture Poets Department, which is that my biggest complaint, which is the sort of like verboseness of the lyrics and how they ruin the melodies, basically what I like to call Taylor's run-on flow.
Yeah, the talky.
Like particularly like the one that continues to stand out to me is the line in the title track where she says, "You took the ring off my middle finger and put it on the one." And to me, if you end the line there, it's clean. But then she says, "You put it on the one they put the wedding ring." I'm like, yeah.
We
got it. You know, and then she adds like about how it made her feel. And I'm just like, okay, enough. The more I listen to the album, the more I think that character and that tick works for the mode that she is in, which is like driven mad with lust, basically, and love, I guess, and sort of like she's in this jumble of a passionate rebound with someone who she's had a tortured history with. And when I think of it through that lens, I can forgive more of it, but it still makes the songs imperfect to me. So like, but I can buy it as a character and as a concept for the album. And where I'm ultimately landing, we had this discussion a little bit tongue in cheek, is this Taylor's worst album? For me, and I think you, it's probably between this and Midnight's the bottom of a, and you're, yeah, sure. We'll leave that. We'll leave Folklore aside for now. We may do.
I made the better Folklore.
I was going to say,
this is,
we may do the all time Taylor rankings later this summer.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think we're definitely going to put a pin in that.
I mean, that's going to be a 2 hour.
Yeah. I mean, look, the important thing is like, I feel like I see a lot of people doing all time Taylor rankings.
And they're all crazy.
Yeah. And it's also like, it's just, it's like, it's cheap. It's chum.
Yeah.
It's bait.
Yeah.
Which is to say, see you in May or so June.
The point I was going to make about this versus Midnight's, where I've landed 10 days out from the album release, is that Midnight's is worse because it's not about anything. It's so tossed off.
It's chaotic.
It's chaotic. It doesn't have a thrust. Like this album is definitely about something. And that's what I tried to do in my edit. So we'll get to our edits.
Yeah. And to that point, Midnight's is a ramshackle collection of imperfect songs. This is a, frankly, relatively coherent collection.
Almost too coherent.
Yes, of imperfect songs, which do have thematic, by and large, through lines. I was thinking a lot about what you said about Joe Alwyn last week.
Mm-hmm.
And
Joe Alwyn is a footnote in his own personal history.
Bro, you've straight asterisk status. Out of control asterisk status.
It's like the meanest diss she could possibly, like any of the semi-breakup songs that she's written about him, like pale in comparison to the fact that The Rebound got an album and he got half a bar. Like, he got Metro Boomin.
You know, he really did. Like, did you see the TMZ Maddie Healy like street
update?
No,
on like the street interview,
yeah, where they're like, dude, have you heard the diss song? And he's like, oh no, but I'm sure it's good.
Matt, how would you rate your Taylor diss track compared to the 30 others?
My diss track,
yeah, Taylor's new song.
I haven't really listened to that much of it, but I'm sure it's good.
All right,
thanks, man.
Have a good one.
Great response,
exactly, like literally. It's the only response.
Yeah.
Like, salute to you, Maddie Healy.
Before we get into re-reviewing the Taylor Swift album 1 week later.
And as a total sidebar, Stagecoach looked pretty lit, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Addison Rae was there.
Yeah. We're waiting.
Yeah. Anywhere Addison Rae is in 2023,
is where you're
2024.
Supposed to be. It's where you're supposed to
except
be.
Except Boiler Room.
I would have been happy to be there, to be fair.
With Addison.
I would have been happy to be. I think that would have been the way to be there.
Yeah. Like in the vicinity of Julia Fox and Addison.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Before we get into reconsidering the Tortured Poets Department.
Every week on Popcast, we are going to re-litigate Tortured Poets Department until like 2027.
Yeah. We should talk about the sales numbers because they came in.
How many of the 19 versions did you purchase?
I didn't purchase any, but I think my streams, now that I've been playing around with,
you're contributing
a lot of the tracks,
to the bottom. Yeah,
like
we contributed.
I didn't buy the Ghost Clear vinyl or whatever it's called, or all the different versions. I think you're right. There was 19.
According to Billboard.
According to Billboard,
versions.
We ended up at 2.6 million. Total, including both streams and sales. I'm going to run down some of the specifics because I just
want to say 2.6 million, that is Metro Boomin and Future plus Metro Boomin and Future plus
Beyonce?
Plus Beyonce. Yeah.
So out of those 2.6 million albums sold, including streams, that's 1.9 copies in traditional album sales, including 859,000 for vinyl alone, which is an all-time record. Beating herself from 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Totally insane. This is stat from Ben Cesario, our colleague's story this morning. As recently as 2006, only about 900,000 LPs were sold in an entire year.
Yeah.
So she did that. in mm-hmm. 1 week.
Sure.
This, as album sales, this puts it just behind NSYNC, No Strings Attached in the year 2000, and Adele's 25, which did 3.4 million when she withheld it from streaming when mm-hmm. it came out. A few
single
years
version.
Back.
Single version, though.
Yes. Yes.
Not to.
Yeah, fine. And just on pre-sales alone, it sold 1.4 million copies on its first day. So that's including all the pre-sales.
Yeah.
And then it did another million
in streams and sales.
In streams and sales in the week after it came out. I mean, it's nuts. Like the 31 tracks, okay, like that. She was padding the stats a little bit mm-hmm. by dropping this as a double album. And I think that ultimately hurt the reception. I think if we would have gone to bed at whatever 4 a.m. or woken up Friday morning when it came out, and it just would have been the album, and then she did the deluxe a week later, like most people have been doing, it wouldn't have felt so oppressive.
This came up on Mailbag.
As a rollout? Yeah, but the fact that it diluted the batting average, which I think is what we'll see, like when you boil this down to what are the best, most vibrant, necessary songs here. There are a lot of good songs here, but I think when you take it out of 31, which is the number that you had when you opened Spotify or Apple or however you were listening to this digitally mm-hmm. in the days that it came out, it's daunting. And then you get to like the sameness of some of the production and the melodies. And I think that really dampened the overall reception to it. Though I have seen both anecdotally and online a sort of coming out of that saying, maybe we judged this too harshly. There was a couple pieces online over the last week, some that made some points and some that did not. Mm-hmm. There was the Bloomberg piece, which I feel like you should chime in on about how this shows that album review culture is broken, because we shouldn't be making these decisions about whether an album is good or bad off of one or two middle of the night listens.
Right. So, okay. Two things can be true at once. One, that is basically true.
Sure.
That is what album review culture has become, or album reaction culture has become.
More so than just straight reviews.
Yes. Yeah. That is true. We, here at the Times, we used to do a lot more overnight reviews of big albums, and then we pulled back from it because we fundamentally felt that was not the best way to approach big albums that demanded a lot of thought and consideration. That said, tell me you don't know how professional music criticism is done without telling me you don't know how professional music criticism is done. Many of the people who had very considered reviews, and I our own Lindsay Zolad's among them,
which was mentioned in the lead of this Bloomberg piece,
obviously had the album
in advance.
Yes. Now,
which used to be way more normal.
I mean, forgive me for aging myself here. Like, I had Stankonia for like 3 months before it came out.
And I had it on Napster.
Yeah. You know? And I had like, you know, Big Pun's debut album for like 8 months before it came out. Right. You know, it was a very different time.
And some artists to this day do that, and some don't.
You see it more, I think, smaller artists, indie rock artists, people who have to build a press narrative in order to kind of get out of like the indie rock gravitational pull.
And people who crucially make vinyl.
Oh,
have to
that
finish
too.
Their albums way in advance.
Yes. Now you saw this with Beyonce, how the vinyl was made, but it didn't actually have the final track list.
And I think that goes for some version of these Taylor ones as well.
Is that true?
Yeah, okay. There's some slight differences.
Okay. So people get advances.
The biggest critics mostly
get advances.
Right. Although not of Beyonce, I think, crucially, in the Cowboy Carter one. And you saw those reviews roll out a little more slowly than some of the big Taylor reviews.
I also want to say, just in defense of like the people who do the work that I do, the best can turn around an incredible review in under 12 hours. Like, absolutely. Like, have I turned out what I believe to be like A-level criticism overnight? Sure. Yes, absolutely. Like, when I had to do it, when I had to be there at midnight, absorb it 2, 3, 4 times, and then stay up till noon the next day writing, I like to think it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Is that my preferred mode? Of course not. Like, would I like to take it home? Would I like to have it in the car? Like, of course. But basically, the thing that was being argued in that Bloomberg thing makes it clear that that person doesn't understand that some critics get advances. Right. And at least a few talked about it on Twitter in response to that piece. Sure. It's not something that we talk about a lot. It's just like, it's process. But yes, we get advances. And then, I have in the past, in albums right. that I've reviewed in the past, I've gotten advances all kinds of weird ways. It is in the interest of an artist's rollout and publicity machine to provide the people who need access to the music with access to the music.
And offering a presidential speech, the people who are going to be reviewing that speech have read it in advance. Not to compare, you know, but yes, that's how a lot of high level.
Are you saying that Tortured Poets Department is a presidential
address?
Speech?
Yes. Yes. And then on the flip side, we don't have to do all on this. We mentioned it last week, like, Tom Bryan at Stereogum
did a great job.
He was on the mailbag with you.
Yeah.
He has a column called Premature Evaluation, like, which that's the whole joke. And he wrote one of the best reviews of the Taylor album because that's what he does. And he's been doing it for longer than a lot of us have been alive.
Yeah, of course. Like,
he just, that's what he does. He cranks out a first reaction. That said, there's the CNN op-ed.
I didn't see came this. Out. What is it?
The headline is, I judged Taylor Swift's album immediately after it came out. Here's why I was wrong. And this is a version of the text I got over the weekend, which is like, three, four, five listens in.
It's fine.
Pretty good.
Okay. I have a sort of a balancing narrative to that.
Sure.
And this is really tied to what I would say is the relationship between critic culture and stan culture. Mm-hmm. And it came from an email that we got from Mailbag that didn't arrive until after we'd recorded it. And unfortunately, I'm having some trouble finding it right now. But the thrust of the email, and if this was yours, forgive me for not being able to find it on short notice.
You're going to paraphrase.
I'm going to paraphrase. The thrust of it was that the primary engine of Taylor Swift fandom right now, and dare I say standom, is COVID/folklore forward. Mm-hmm. Which is, to us, who are professional critics who've been covering Taylor since 2008, an ahistorical way of looking at Taylor and engaging with Taylor.
2020 forward. Basically.
Yes. But if your starting point is folklore and you're moving forward from there, everything on Tortured Poets Department probably makes a tremendous amount of sense.
Even if you've gone back and engaged with the Taylor's versions re-releases.
Right. But if your fallen love point is folklore evermore, if that's where you kind of bought into what Taylor can do as an artist and you're still relatively young, everything that is on this album existed on those two albums or existed on Midnight's Lover. Mm-hmm. And so it feels totally to me of a piece with this era. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, of all the Taylor eras, is this my favorite era, quote unquote? It's not my favorite era. But
you're counting these 4 years as one large era.
Abstractly.
And even maybe 2019 with some of Lover in there.
Yes. Yes. I think to me, this is not the best stuff that Taylor's ever done, but I think you could see it as of a piece. And I think if that is your entry point, this album probably makes way more sense than if you're thinking about Fearless, Red, Reputation, 1989, etc.
Well, this goes back to a point you made on the Drake episode, either this year or last, which is also like, if you're 18,
yes,
Drake was your Drake, yes. You know, that Drake is your Drake, mm-hmm. and
Taylor's
and
your
so
Taylor.
On and so forth, mm-hmm. and like any version of Taylor, and that's sort of the magic and the sort of canny of this era of Taylor, really, is that all the old stuff and the new stuff coexist at the same time. So you can have something like All Too Well, and the people who weren't born when All Too Well came out can relive it, mm-hmm. as if it's fresh with the 10-minute version and getting it to go number one. And we saw it even more recent history with Cruel Summer. Like, the folklore Taylor fans went back and were like, hey, that Cruel Summer song, like, pretty good.
Yeah.
And then that becomes her biggest radio hit of last year or whatever it was. So I think you're right that what angle you're viewing Taylor at really affects how you're digesting an album like
this. And I think a lot of the initial cool reaction to this is because it encapsulates and either improves upon or doesn't, but it feels like the summation of the least effective era of Taylor for I think a lot of people who've been around for a really long time. So if you're going to battle with someone for whom this is the encapsulation of the first and best era, you're always going to be at war with that person.
But I will say something I have felt with her since at least Reputation is the way she writes a pop song, which is like a little wonky, at least as she's gotten more comfortable and less Max Martin-y, less scientific. It does sometimes take 3 or 4 listens before you really realize, or 5 or 6 or 7, like, oh, that part is stuck in my head. Like, she really, you know, she alludes to it on one of these songs. Like, she, you know, she puts drugs in these things.
Yeah.
And like, sometimes they creep up on you. And that's another thing I think she has in common with Drake. Like, I remember, now I'm dating myself, I remember when Started From the Bottom came out and I was like, what is he what is he doing here? You know, like, this isn't the Drake we signed up for. And then 10 listens, 100 listens, 10 years later, you're like, oh, like, it makes total sense. And you might not get it until the sky clears. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a little bit, and they're inching. They're so big. They're like they're the Titanic. So they're sort of like inching in a new direction. And sometimes it takes the listeners a while to catch up to the subtle tweaks.
Also, the important thing, and again, I'm not sort of an intention of the author person, but I think it's important, and I think this as much with Drake as I do with Taylor, in the present moment, you're observing these kind of like small changes, but the artist knows where they're going.
Yeah.
They're tilting, they're, you know, not to be all billiards about it, but it's like they're setting up
the next
three
shots
down the road.
Yeah.
And so you're only seeing the one shot. And so maybe there's 2 or 3 or 4 where that's a logical path. Is this a logical path to something? I don't know. It feels more like the end of something to me.
And I still
agree
with that.
But I think it could be. But I think a lot of times when an artist turns, and an artist who's very smart is turning somewhere and is taking you there one small step at a time. That said, 31 songs, a lot of songs.
It's too many songs.
It's a lot of songs. I know you are already making an edited version, a trimmed version.
Mm-hmm.
This is something you do.
Yeah,
this
is with albums that I feel like are too long, which most albums are, especially now. I'm also of the mindset, this has been a take of mine forever, there's no double album that wouldn't be better as a single album. And I firmly believe that, including all the classic double albums that you're going to put in the comments. Like, great for you. Make an edited version, it'll be better. And like, fine. I also get that sometimes the sprawl is the point, but I prefer a tighter listen because I grew up on CDs. I don't know.
I decided to rise to the challenge as well.
Yep. I did teach you how to move tracks around on a Spotify playlist before we started.
Grandpa's here.
And I don't even use Spotify.
I made a 12-song version.
Okay. I ended up at 13.
Okay.
So we're in the same ballpark.
I made a 12-song version. It's not, my through line is not narrative. My through line, I tried to build it. I mean, we were texting about this yesterday. I tried to build it like an album with like a beginning, highs, lows, middle parts.
Sure.
I tried to build it in that way.
Yeah. And this was basically as if Taylor was Lil Wayne and we were Mac Main. Some people know what I'm talking about. And he was like, here's the 31 songs I've got.
Make
an album.
Yeah, make something.
So we executive produced a playlist, each of us. And obviously we'll link to these in the comments.
Yes, Joe will figure out how to do that.
So where'd you start? Let's just go there and then you can run down.
I started with the Black Dog.
Ah, I'm just going to jump to it. I ended with the Black Dog.
Okay.
How you don't miss me in the shower, and remember how my rain-soaked body was shaking. Do you hate me? Was it hazing for a cruel fraternity I pledged?
I started with the Black Dog because I felt like I didn't love Fortnite as an opener. I don't love it as a song. It's a little too spectral.
Is it on your list?
It's not on my list.
Okay. So I'll just jump right in and say, since we're talking about it, I kept Fortnite where it was. I tried to winnow out what I felt didn't fit the story lyrically.
Okay.
And thematically.
You cut all the Alwyn songs?
No, actually, I kept one. But I think they can also apply because, you know.
Yeah. British.
Two of these guys are from London, or two of these guys have London
associations. A place where I have lived.
Yes, I've heard. But I think Fortnite works to me as an opener, and I kept it where it was. But it's interesting that you just cut it entirely.
Yeah, I felt like it set the boat out at the wrong port.
Okay.
It didn't like it was. It was not the place. Mm-hmm. It needed to start somewhere else. How do we want to do this? You want to just run through your list?
Well, can you tell me why you picked the Black Dog first, and then I want to ask overall how many tracks from the quote unquote second disc made.
That's actually super good. I didn't do the math on it, okay. But we'll do the math. Okay. I started with the Black Dog because I felt like it was.
You're starting in media res, basically, by starting with the Black Dog. I feel like.
Yeah, but that's okay. But is that wrong?
It's cool. No,
yeah.
It's cool.
To me, I felt like the Black Dog was a good example of Taylor's singing. It had a specificity, whether or not the Black Dog is real. I mean, you know, there's all the threads.
Yeah, they flooded some random bug.
Congratulations to those
pubs.
Yeah, that's congratulations to them. It had Taylor specificity.
You share your location with anyone?
No. Are you kidding me? Do you? I mean,
no.
Not even?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
Never. Literally never.
Never. I can't. How would I do that?
Yeah.
Right. Literally, how would I do
right.
that?
Right.
That's it. If anybody's ever been in my phone and turned it on, possibly, I suppose. But no, I have never voluntarily done that. So the singing I like. I like the specificity of it. And I like that it's not overly deterministic stylistically. I think the reason Fortnite was tough for me is it felt very deterministic stylistically. Yeah. This felt like there's two basic directions on this album, Antonoffian and Desnarian. This feels like it kind of lives a little bit in between those two.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, that felt like a good jumping off point.
Okay. Yeah. And I like this song. I put it at the end of mine because I really like it. I think it's the best song
on the second part
of this album, the anthology version. I only included one other song from the anthology.
I did more.
Yeah. I only, the other one I have is I'm Gonna Get You Back, which even given the complications that we talked about last episode, the conceit being the same as an Olivia song,
mm-hmm.
and I like them both.
Gonna smash up your bike, I haven't decided yet, but I'm gonna get you back. Whether I'm gonna curse you out or take you back to my house, I haven't decided yet, but I'm gonna get you back.
And I think this is a good version of that, and it's fun. It's really catchy. It's one of the tighter pop songs on here, so I have that somewhere on the second half of mine. But other than that, all of my the 11 other songs on my playlist are all from the album proper.
I might be like 6 and 6.
Okay.
Or 7 and 5.
Interesting. All right. You want to run through your whole thing and then
talk me
through it.
So after the Black Dog, I have My Boy Only Breaks His Toys.
Okay. I left that one out.
Okay.
But I think it's fine. It was an edge case for me.
I Look in People's Windows.
Oh wow.
Which I thought, like, the more I listened to it, I was like, this is dark. This is a really unwell person wrote this song. Jeez.
Which again, it's like the character of this album, and I think sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. That one hasn't grabbed me.
I found that the songs that ended up grabbing me, especially on the back half of the record, on the anthology part of the record. Again, people know I've not been a fan of Dessner and what Dessner has done to Taylor and with Taylor. But what I think is some of the more fraught songwriting needs the space that Dessner is giving here. I don't love the tone of the piano. Like, I don't like the tone of the guitar. Like, I don't love some of the specifics of it, but I feel like it needs a space. And the Antonoff stuff to me has felt more cluttered here.
Mm-hmm.
So I Look in People's Windows, then So Long London, the compromise song, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me.
That was another.
That was an edge case for
you? To me, that was the.
That's not on yours.
No.
Oh,
wow. And that was the one where I was like, I had it on and then I took it off.
Oh, wow.
Because I respect it, but I don't like listening to it. It's a little, the mixed metaphors bother me a bit. It's a little, you know what it is?
Little whiny.
It's a Reputation
it is.
Song to me, so it makes sense that you like it.
Yeah.
It's very, it's theatrical in a way that I don't love. But I find you drawn a little bit more to the operatic theatricality that Taylor does.
Yes.
Like on Reputation, for instance. And
is this the one that I refer to as the Baz Luhrmann song?
I mean, it is.
Yeah, it is the Baz Luhrmann song. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, and it has circus imagery, and you know, it's the Greatest Showman. I respect it, but I was like, I don't want to listen to it that often. So I kept it off of mine.
Then I have the Tortured Poets Department title track. Then I have The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. Love of My Life. LOML.
Which you called out as a favorite.
One of my favorites. Into Chloe or Sam or Sophie or Marcus.
What do you like about it?
What strikes me about this song is I like Taylor. I know that those are real people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not named that, but I know that those are real.
Those are Blake Lively's future kids.
Yeah, right. I feel like sometimes Taylor's distaste, her kind of like teeth sucking, comes out in these very precise details. And like, these names feel like stand-ins for archetypes, like much like in the All Too Well 10-minute video where you like look around the dinner table, whatever. And I'm just like, these are the archetypes. Like, it's like, that's these people.
Yeah. Which she also alludes to in But Daddy, I Love Him, where she says the specific name. She says the Hannahs and the whatever.
Yes, right. You know, the pearl clutching thing. Yeah. Although I feel like that's more about fans.
Right. Yes. Different people, but naming the archetypes.
Yes. So to me, I can feel the like teeth suckingness in this, but it's done in a way where it's like patient and contemplative and da da da, but it's also just like.
So let's listen to a little bit of that one, because I feel like this one's gotten lost in the shuffle.
I agree.
If you want to break my cold, cold heart, just say I loved you the way that you were. If you want to tear my world apart, just say you always wondered.
Now for final three. Mm-hmm. I think my version of this album is like way more downtown. Like, it's way sadder than the actual album.
You're a secret Dessner head. Not only are you a tortured poet, but you're a Dessner head.
It's been instructive.
Yeah.
Honestly, this has been instructive.
Yeah.
I have not done the thing. That should be a real segment. Is like, that should be our first Twitch stream.
Okay.
It's like subjecting me to folklore, like live, and like watching me engage.
A live reconsideration of folklore.
Yeah.
That might also be summer content or winter content.
All right, final three songs, Clara Bow, and then two more from the anthology.
Wow.
Peter.
Okay.
And The Manuscript.
Mm.
To me, I think what I ended up going with, I was thinking a lot about...
You were depressed this weekend?
Yeah, maybe. I was thinking, I've been sick on and off for like 3 weeks, so maybe a little bit. I think I was thinking a lot about sonic cohesion. I also... One thing that I did not reassess or did not feel differently about was like how much like the Antonoffian, like the gestures, just like, I just don't want to hear them anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe I'm running from them a little bit, but I also felt like this felt like a coherent top to bottom isonic idea driven album with like one or two spikes.
Sure. It's funny. We went in very different directions. In fact, we made sort of the anthology like between us. We made a 35 track version.
Okay. So what was your sort of like guiding principle?
I mean, I wanted hooks and I wanted hits, and I basically made a synth pop album. Okay. You know, I made like the synth pop album that was here and like maybe I thought I was sick of, but grew on me. So I started with Fortnite, as we said.
Yep.
And I sort of like jumped in. The top is like mostly songs from the top of the regular album, but I wanted to go harder basically into
making, harder, faster.
Yeah, harder, faster. So I went Down Bad next.
Oh, wow.
Which I feel like is silly, but again, like on purpose in a way that at first I thought it was too cringy, but now I'm like, okay, the metaphor of a rebound as an alien invasion, and then you just get left back on Earth and you're like, what am I supposed to do? Like that, like and just the silliness of like crying at the gym, the lyrics, her using Twitter speak and sort of like online speak, like Down Bad, you know, like the fact that now there's a song called Down Bad on a Taylor album when there was, you know, rap songs called this 5-10 years ago. It's like sometimes it works for her, sometimes it doesn't, but I feel like she gets away with it here again because of what the song is about. Then I have Tortured Poets Department, which I think works, the title track. We both have it on there. And then I'm jumping right into I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. That you left that one off because it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit.
It doesn't
your vibe.
Fit. I like it. It just didn't quite hold. And I felt like you went witty, punchy Taylor. I went in my sad bag Taylor. So.
And I will say, like Down Bad, like the chorus of this song, you know, I cry all the time, whatever, like all that, like that's one of the best hooks on the album. Like that chorus to me, it's what she does best. She's writing about herself, obviously, but there's like a little, there's enough self-deprecation, but she's still flexing, you know, it's like it hit, this song really, really worked for me.
I think I made more of an effort to reconcile the two halves of this thing.
I leaned into one.
Yeah.
But then this is my Dessner, then track five, which historically among Swifties is like an important track, usually a sad one. I think So Long London is track five on the real album.
Yes.
But I just put Daddy, I Love Him there. Cause to me, that's the high point of this album. It has all of the things, all the imperfections that I find a little bit annoying about this album, but it lands them, like, you know, the Vipers line, like it's too verbose. And yet like the chorus is so tight. And also she brings in the third chorus perspective shift, which is like the country Taylor, and I think a nod to Love Story on this one specifically, where she gets back together with the rebound, you know, which is like, I like the narrative thrust of that one. Guilty as Sin, you left off.
I did.
That's another like synth pop one that's been stuck in my head a lot. It's really, I'm gonna say, lustful in a way that she hasn't always been successful at, but this one landed, you know. I'm like, oh, she's like,
Let's listen to this
one. Down bad.
We should listen to this one.
Yeah.
That was another one that I feel like didn't get as much attention on the main album as some of the other ones that
you
picked.
But I feel like it's like a sleeper. Like, I feel like you're seeing more and more memes about how insane of a song
more and
that
more
is.
People are talking
more
about
and more people are memeing Guilty as Sin. I'm gonna get you back. I have, and then this is where I sort of like downshift.
Okay,
and I have So Long London, which I think, you know, again, some of the tighter writing on the album, which I appreciate. You know, the thing about the fog clearing or whatever, and she says like, but I love this place, like the those that feels vintage to me from her. And then I have The Alchemy, which I think is another one. That was one where I'm like, do I like this? Is it too soggy? But it has just enough little vocal melodic hooks that I kept coming back to it. And same thing, I Can Fix Him, No Really I Can is my next track. And that was one where I was on the fence, but it fit the story I was telling with my playlist. And then my last three, sort of going out, Smallest Man Who Ever Lived was on yours too. I think that one just builds really nicely. It feels epic when it gets to the bridge and the outro, which we talked about at length the first time we talked about this album. This is like, if you're asking about Matty Healy about the diss track, I think like this is the diss track
probably.
And it's quite brutal in a classic.
This is the Jehovah's Witness the buying drugs from a friend of a friend,
sliding or trying into inboxes. You know, girls who are, she's too young for you, bro.
And candidly, if this is the song that he was being asked at and he said, I'm sure it was good, he was right.
Then I have Clara Bow, which you also have, which I think is a good album closer, but it's a little too obvious as an album closer. So I did like the album closer Fake Out, and I put Clara Bow into The Black Dog, which felt like an after credits scene to me. Like the movie ends on Clara Bow, and then there's like a little bit.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you know, in the 31 track version, it does flow into that, and it actually does kind of flow into that.
Yeah, like it's anything, the first song on the second disc.
Right, and if anything, Black Dog feels like it belongs on the first disc more than it belongs on the second disc. Yeah. I actually, as I was going through this exercise, because I found myself a little bit more sympathetic to the album than I was 7 days ago, I was actually thinking much more about if we had to cut 10 songs rather than pick 10 songs or 12 songs. Cutting 10 songs felt like an easier task. Like a lot of the songs that you have from the first part, I think they're fine. Mm-hmm. Like they're fine. They're not my favorites, but they solve a problem.
Right.
Whereas I'm looking at a song like So High School.
Right.
Or the Kim song.
Right.
Thank You, Amy.
Right. F-U-C-K.
Yeah, F-U-C-K. Whatever. Right.
Like, you shout know, out to Britney.
Right. I look at those, and I'm like, those can just get excised.
Right.
So maybe the real answer is not so much that there's a 12 or 13 song version that needs to come out, as much as maybe there's like a 20 song version that keeps the best stuff that you pick, the best stuff that I pick, has those synth pop highs, has those depressive highs. And then all this stuff that like seems pretty obviously like a demo that like no one sat down and really sandpapered.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff.
Like you said, it's
watched.
The vault, but in the instant
vault. It's the vault in real time.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I did have a sad weekend.
Where do you stand on like, if you have to chop up an album, make your own playlist version, like obviously that's where we're at as a culture and music.
Yes,
like,
everything's an edit.
Everything is an edit.
Yep.
Does it mean that it's a bad album? Like, if it's not good in the way that it was delivered to you by the artist, or is it? Are we so deep into remix culture that, like, if you can find 12, 13 songs you want to listen to on an album, that means it's a great success?
I mean, this is how I felt about a lot of hip-hop albums for a long time. So it's like, I think maybe we are moving, that's expanding. You know, hip-hop often very early on technological innovation. I think that's how I felt about a lot of hip-hop records for a long time. You talked earlier about the reception of this album, and we talked about it on Main Mailbag last week. To me, it depends who's doing the receiving. Like, a fan is taking this not necessarily as starting as track one and going to track 31. They're taking it as a full set of information that's going to be absorbed in 100 different ways. I think a fan, more likely than listening from track one to track 31, absorbing tracks that they really like, making jokes on Twitter, making TikToks. Taylor made sure that the album was on TikTok and available. People are absorbing it that way. I just don't think that absorption is linear at all anymore. And so, you know, some reviews refer to data dumps. That's certainly something that I've talked about in prior reviews, Post Malone and Ray Shremmerd and Migos, and et cetera. It's how much are you putting into the slipstream? And so as an album top to bottom, maybe there's like 50 people that care about that.
Right.
But I just don't think that that's the primary thing anymore. But for me, it still matters. But I don't do the thing that you do.
Right.
If anything, if I get bored by track five and I love tracks 8 through 10, I may never get to 8 through 10 because like I'm listening and I'm like, oh, I'm at track five. I'm like, ah, I don't like this so much. Should we go out on something that we both like?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Long London, the true compromise point on this album and the moment, the high watermark of Joe Alwyn content, allegedly.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
We're back. I'm John.
I'm Joe.
It's Popcast Deluxe at youtube.com/popcast. Like, subscribe, comment, and get frisky. We were talking about Taylor, pop star.
Mm-hmm.
An incandescent, just a beacon of achievement. Not everybody is in this part of the atmosphere. There are a lot of aspirants, and I and I think we have avoided. There are certain aspirants I want to say that maybe we've avoided talking about because maybe we didn't feel like they were quite ready for a full episode.
Sure,
but you know, we have a segment.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple people who I think, especially in the last like 3 weeks,
yeah,
have experienced something of a boost.
JoJo Siwa. The dance move. Yeah.
Right. That's for, you know, everybody listening. Just imagine what I was doing.
We'll play the meme.
Yeah. We haven't really talked about Chapel Roan. We haven't really talked about Sabrina Carpenter, both of whom have had an interesting 2 or 3 week run.
They're overachieving in the spring semester.
That, wow, that's true. It's almost graduation.
Yeah.
To me, of the two, Chapel Roan, like by far the more interesting of the two.
Yes. The songwriter, the full package.
Very much so.
Whether or not you like the package or not, fine.
But someone works with Dan Nigro. I think Nigro gives Chapel Roan like a bit of the raw, huskier stuff.
Uh-huh. As opposed to Olivia.
As opposed to Olivia, yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
but she's in the Olivia mold, which is taking a lot from Taylor and the women who came before her, Lorde and Lana and all of the, you know, Halsey, if you want to go, you know, like all the sort of...
Melanie Martinez?
This was a little sad. The Alessia Cara, I sent you.
I sent
remember
it to
her
so
on
sad.
TMZ. Like, Alessia, you got this. Come on back.
A great voice.
Yeah.
A great singer.
Yeah.
A great voice.
But synthesizes all of that and does something like quite original, quite specific, quite writerly, Chapel Roan.
And you know, open for Olivia on this tour. And one of the things that I really left that tour thinking is part of the reason Olivia chose Chapel Roan is Chapel, like you say, structurally is pretty similar in terms of approach to pop inheritance, but much bawdier, much more lyric, as there's a rawness. The thing that we talk about Olivia is really, really good songs, but stitched really tight.
Polished rawness.
Yes. But Chapel Roan is the opposite in that regard. And I
raw
felt
polish.
Yes. But I left that show thinking like Chapel Roan was there to say all the things that Olivia like couldn't say. She was like Obama's translator on Key and Peele, like all the things that Olivia can't quite say. Sabrina Carpenter, a pure cipher to me.
Say the joke.
I said this on Instagram story, and still no one has taken me up on it. How has no one called Sabrina Carpenter Dua Lipa?
Look, this is what I'm going to say. Dua should have had espresso. Like the A&R,
this is what
the
I'm
A&R,
saying. They dropped the ball.
Dropped the ball. Like dropped this new album is coming out. It's a little quiet for
whatever those songs are.
Yeah,
there are like, songs, I suppose. But yeah,
and espresso is
it's a Dua Lipa song
and it's a hit. It's like we talked about this when it came out. We're like, dupe. Does anyone really care about?
Just can I just have like letters here, like Dua Lipa? Can I just like? Can I just have it, Jamie? Pat Sawyer, can you just give it to me just in the sky? Thank you. I'm just going to assume it's going to be there.
But and the first time I heard espresso, I, you know, Dua Lipa aside, I was like, it's the peak of like millennial Gen Z lack of enunciation. I was like, I understood, I think, zero lyrics in this song, including the song title.
Yes, that's actually a really okay. That's a super good point. It is a great example of a song where the lyrics are colored into a line of the melody.
Yeah.
Like the melody is good.
It's like, it's very Swedish in that way.
Yes.
It's a Max Martin-esque thing.
But the lyrics are like, I just sort of imagine the lyric, like tiny letters in the small part of the melody and big letters and the word, they have no connection whatsoever to the words of the narrative.
And then you read the lyrics and I'm like, oh, this is why I didn't know what she was saying. Cause the lines don't really make any sense. That's that me espresso is like,
and also
she's saying that she has the effect of espresso on her lover.
Is that right? Sure.
You also, can't sleep. That's that me espresso. It's sort of like Tortured Poets Department. You're like, what is the grammatical construction here?
Also, the second meme that's come out of this is I'm working late because I'm a singer.
Because I'm a singer.
I'm working late because I'm a singer.
If Drake used that line, I'd be like, bar. I'm just being honest, you know.
I'm working late
because I'm a singer.
Because I'm a singer. What, like... I'm a singer.
It's, but like all together, like this is the song that's had this path where it starts as a meme. It's like people are into this a little bit ironically, maybe. Yeah. And then they're like,
I'm a freak / world-class sinner.
On the 10th listen, you're like, ah, banger, you know?
Yeah, I'm a freak world-class sinner, yeah.
And we're going to be hearing espresso all summer, I'm going to go ahead and say.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you're totally right about Dua Lipa's A&R person, because if I was Dua Lipa and I saw this song coming up from nowhere.
Is this like in the reject pile somewhere in the Gmail attachments?
Literally up from nowhere and eating my shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
On my release week, basically.
Yeah. It's tough.
That's really, really tough. Yeah, I mean, like, also there's a lot of
Doja. Why didn't we have this?
Also, there's a lot of Doja in this. Yeah. It's like, we don't want to lose that. But like, I do like the weirdness of it, the awkwardness of it, and the sort of fundamental anonymity of it suits a pop star like Sabrina Carpenter, who is some of those things. Like Sabrina Carpenter, allegedly the third in the Olivia Rodrigo Joshua,
the subject of driver's license,
or
the second subject of driver's license.
Yes. I went back to listen to prior Sabrina Carpenter songs.
I've shouted out that album on the
show.
There's
some okay stuff.
Emails I can't forward or whatever. I still don't know the title.
Emails I can't send.
But she went from a lowercase girly to
yes.
Lipa, which is like, it's fine if you weren't going to cut it as a lowercase girly, as like a, you know, confessional bedroom whatever. But in the middle she put out the deluxe and that had like a pseudo hit on it in Feather.
Yes.
And she's,
I also want to say,
work for the
biggest
espresso.
Her biggest streaming song is actually the one that I think is the best, which is called Nonsense.
Yes,
that's the best one. And also kind of like funkier than she is,
right?
So good.
Which again is a Dua thing.
Yes, a Dua thing, and again, or a BB Rexha thing. Yeah. You know, no slander.
Yeah, no.
No slander. You know, this is a person who is trying to find a shape that they fit into.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that we talk a lot about on this show, of people trying on styles until they land on a style, or until sometimes, frankly, a style lands on them.
Right.
Sabrina Carpenter may well have had a style land on her.
And the Nonsense thing is also worth mentioning because Sabrina opened for Taylor some of the dates of Eras last year. And Nonsense is the one that's been a little viral throughout, growing momentum because she does the little sassy outro every time.
Okay.
Where she like adds a few bars to Nonsense.
Oh, on the live, you're saying?
Live.
Oh, okay.
And
I haven't seen
it. It's always a little racy.
Oh,
And it's often city specific or something going on in her life.
Oh, I haven't caught
this. And the one from Coachella alluded to her relationship with our boy from Saltburn.
Barry Keoghan.
Yes. And that, like, that in and of itself,
streetwear aficionado,
has like a Barry million Keoghan. Views on YouTube, like just the clip of her doing the outro about I'm so high he drinks my bath water or whatever it is.
Oh, and then he has like the Kelsey response,
right?
Where's
yeah.
He's drinking my bath water like it's red wine. The jealousy you got here in my headline.
So all of this is like, it's working. You know what I mean? Like this momentum and starting from opening a big tour, much like Chapel Roan, to like a few almost there singles. And then like Espresso is like just big and dumb enough to work. Now, Chapel Roan has had a very similar arc that sort of crests also with Coachella. And that starts, you were talking about this before the show, like there's casual Chapel Roan.
Okay.
There's casual, which is where I came on board.
Yes, same.
And then there's the new one.
Okay. So like for everybody, which is to say my friends or acquaintances who have been DMing or texting and been like Chapel Roan, like in the last 3 weeks, forgive me if my response has been like, where were you 9 months ago? And to the people who, when I got on board at Casual and you got on board, are probably like, forgive us for not being on 6 to 12 months prior to that.
Right.
So I'll take that.
Yeah.
But Chapel Roan has been good for a long time at this point. What has happened is I think the Olivia tour put her in front of a lot more faces. And someone said this to me. I wish I could remember who. I'm sorry. But maybe it was Elamin, said like people showed up early for the Olivia tour.
Wow. To see Chapel Roan.
Yeah. Or they're just
wanted a good
their
spot
studio. They're students.
Yeah, right. They're Olivia fans.
Yeah, they're good students. Yeah. You know, and they wanted to be there on time.
Yeah. And they paid a lot for those tickets. You might as well see the whole show when you're young and your legs work.
I was on the merch line myself. But no, I did see Chapel Roan. The Olivia tour, tiny desk.
Big tiny desk. Full drag persona.
Yeah. So Chapel Roan, I did not know this until this morning. Advertises as a drag persona. That's not her name.
Sure.
This is her persona.
Yep.
When I've seen her do some interviews where none of the makeup,
right.
You know, she's wearing a baseball cap.
It's a little burlesque, the whole thing.
Like, yes.
It's
early Gaga, but not quite as, how is it different from early Gaga?
It's like the club version instead of like the nightclub version. You know, it's like
yes,
Le Poisson Rouge instead of the box.
Yes, that's a totally good way of putting it. And if you understand those references, congratulations.
And it's time for bed.
Yes. It's someone who was like a really, really good theater performer in high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's nothing that's value neutral.
That's Nicki, that's
yes.
Gaga, that's Cardi B.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there is something like Gaga always seemed interested in testing the outer boundary of performance and kind of like, what if this thing collapses? This feels much more like, what if I add more to it? What if I make it bigger? What if I make it more theatrical? What if I am on stage expressing more feeling.
It's more diaristic, certainly. Like it's very conversational. It's very specific, casual. We'll play a little bit of it. 2 weeks in your mom invites me to her house in Long Beach. Is it casual now? I know what you tell your friends. It's casual if it's casual now. It's like these are like away message lyrics, you know?
Yeah, this is like Notes app. Like,
yeah, Notes app lyrics. And then she did a smart thing, which is, you know, she puts out the album last year, The Rise and Fall of a Midwestern Princess, and that's gaining its momentum. And then she really takes advantage of this moment by putting out a song which sort of builds on what she's done for the last year or two. I think it's called Good Luck, Babe. And it has the same, it's a kiss off. It's very specific. It's mean. It's like quite biting about a she writes about situationships, you know, much like the tortured poets department. And she has a very modern approach to that in the sort of Child of Lord and Lana way.
Yeah. And also, you talk about the diaristic nature of the lyrics, which, you know, obviously plenty of artists have approached to. And, you know, one thing that came up on Mailbag was someone asked if Taylor was borrowing from Mitski, Phoebe, Adrian Lenker.
Sure.
You know, which I don't actually think she is, but that's one kind of, there's this kind of like abstracted big feelings diaristic mm-hmm. stuff, but actually I don't like this. To me, feels like way pettier. It's way more specific.
There
this
is some also Phoebe in it. Phoebe will have those lines.
Phoebe, yes, where Phoebe is like that.
We're fighting about of this very specific yes. thing, and you know, here's something body, and here's something emotional, juxtaposed really closely together.
But like on the album, like the song "My Kink Is Karma." Mm-hmm. I love the level of detail. Mm-hmm. I love the pettiness. But I love also the kind of like moral high ground of it. Of right. just like, it's just really, really excellently written. And it doesn't feel like a song that any other contemporary pop star, A level, B level, C level, could pull off or even maybe would want to pull off.
It's funny that you say that because there is an A level Karma. Yes. Taylor Swift's of Karma,
yes.
which I think this is more successful than.
Yes,
there is a C-level Karma. That's the JoJo Siwa song that I got alluded to.
I can't believe I walked right into that yeah.
early on. And this is firmly the B-level Karma.
But the best of them.
But the best of them. So yeah. I feel like we should
go out with that.
A little bit of Karma.
No, of Karma or My Kink Is Karma?
My Kink Is Karma. The Chapel Roan Karma.
We are not going to play the JoJo Siwa song. like with... With all due respect to the emerging genre that JoJo Siwa is seeking to pioneer, we're not going to play it. We're going to give JoJo Siwa some time to iron out the details. We're back. It's Podcast Deluxe. It's Songs of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, what the hell happened last week? No. Seriously. Like, if 7 days ago,
yep.
if when we were just here recording, we're like, what do you think next week's songs are going
to be? Usually we were in Taylor Swift's universe.
Yeah, like, what we were thinking, on a normal week, we might be like, oh, so-and-so's coming out. We kind of think such mm-hmm. and such. What the hell is going on right now?
All of a sudden, the trunk started rattling in the distance, and it got closer and closer, and it's a slab, and it's and the trunk is rattling, and it's Tommy Richmond, our $1 million baby.
VHS version, at least preferred.
Yeah, coming for the top of the streaming charts.
Tommy Richmond is a...
DMV?
Soul singer? Funk? Singer,
producer.
signed to Brent Faiyaz's label.
Yep.
I'm sure.
Good for Brent.
Like, great. Good. Big come up.
Yeah. Like, this is working. You're the new Yo Gotti.
We should just. I think before we start talking about, it, we should just play this.
VHS version.
Yes.
Put out two versions.
$1 million baby VHS version. Let's just listen to a little bit of it. Not even a real video for it yet. There's
just
a TikTok.
There's an official visualizer.
Yes. And there's like some TikToks of like him and like I assume his friends, like mm-hmm. just like
yeah,
big head nod energy. Mm-hmm. This is okay. So what this tells me, there's some Sugar Free in this, mm-hmm. some Drew Down.
Mm-hmm.
I love hearing it reminds me a little bit of the kind of fun pop oriented version of like when Dame Funk was like doing like, I'm doing this like Los Angeles electro revivalism. It's like that, but it's like not for heads. Yeah. It's for pop, you know, it's for pop.
And kids. This is the thing. All of the words you're saying right now, like the kids who are streaming
have
the song
no idea.
Are just like blinking slowly at you.
That is correct.
And that's the point. It's like, that's why Travis Scott works, you know, is like yeah. he can just pull from some quite obvious things, and this is slightly less obvious.
Yeah.
And people are like, whoa, that's a good song. And you're like, yeah, that's 3-6 Mafia or whatever right. it is. Mm-hmm. But he's doing that in a slightly more sophisticated way, it seems so far.
What is that? Why is this song so big?
I guess the snippet was huge, and that's why we have the two versions. The VHS version has the clip to bass, like yeah. the static on purpose, which was in the snippet, and then there's a cleaned up one that I imagine is going to get played on the radio eventually. Yeah. But so I assume this was big on TikTok.
I guess.
You tell me. People were anticipating this.
I do want to say, sometime last week I deleted TikTok off my phone for 2 days.
Good for you.
I'm trying to prepare myself for a summer of concentration.
Yeah.
So I deleted for a couple days. So if this happened during those two right. days, my bad. Yeah. Also, it's funny that this song arrived in the same week as the Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist conversation.
Yeah. You think Charlie Puth should jump on the remix for Million Dollar Baby?
I know Charlie Puth right now is sitting in his home studio where I've been with his bank of synths and being and like finding the counter melodies.
He's doing the sheet music.
Yeah, he's doing the counter melodies in his head.
He's transcribing.
Yeah, no, Charlie Puth, get on this record. This also reminds me a lot of when we were talking, I guess this was also on regular podcast, talking about Timberlake and like what I thought a good move for Timberlake could have been.
Hire Tommy Richmond.
Well, no, I was going to say hire Chromeo.
Yeah, right.
Is this a Chromeo Timberlake record? But just without either of those people right. participating. What does this song portend?
Man,
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
I don't know.
You like it?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, there's nothing to be mad at. It's just like pleasant sounds.
It never really resolves.
With some nostalgia. Yes. Yeah, but
it never
like,
really resolves.
You know,
it's like, it's a vamp.
Yes.
It's a vamp. It's not a sweet. It's a vamp.
But it's going to. It portends a hot summer. I don't know. Like,
who's going to get on this record?
Probably everyone. Everyone will try. Rick Ross is writing to it, you know, along with Puth.
Who would we like to see on this record?
You know, we're going to, there's going to be.
Sexy Red?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh, you think there should be a verse?
I think there will be, whether there should be or not.
Right.
This is the other thing is like the minute something like this becomes popular, immediately people start figuring out what parts can I kind of like strip it down to.
Right.
I do think at some point someone's going to put a verse on it.
Which happened to maybe the next song that we want to talk about
for
Songs of the Week.
I think so. This will be your song for this week.
Yes. And this is a record that's been bubbling for a long time, mm-hmm. especially in New York.
Yes.
And on Friday, Ice Spice arrives on, for sure, the Cash Cobain
Bass Swag
record. You compared Bass Swag. You said he's the Monty
to Cash Cobain's Fetty Wap.
Right? And you're like, oh, this is another guy? Like, sounds like Uzi, maybe?
Yeah. And also, it's like, I think, I mean, I don't know.
This is a duet, essentially.
Yes, candidly, I'll confess to not being familiar with the oeuvre of Bass Swag prior to this, so forgive me. But, it does seem a little bit like you're in the studio and you know you need somebody else. And it's like,
yeah.
This guy.
Yeah.
You. Again, maybe Bass Swag's got like 30 tapes. Maybe like Nas has like 30, you know, like it's like, oh, no. I've got the 37 best Bass Swag songs. If so.
Right.
Sorry.
In the comments.
Yeah. Sorry about that. But like, it does feel like that. But Cash Cobain and Bass Swag going back and forth. It is a duet, but they are somewhat similar a little bit. They have some, you know, the patterns are similar.
Could be one guy doing two
voices.
Could
be one guy. Yeah, exactly.
But this is, I mean, look, not to say that Cash Cobain is Chapel Roan, but like the come ups are similarly shaped, which is like he's had a lot of moments over the last couple years.
Yeah.
This is the pioneer of sexy drill. You know, Ice Spice has obviously taken that to a different level, but mm-hmm. Cash Cobain has remained really true to himself.
Mm-hmm.
He still putting out stuff that sounds like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite explicit.
All the Cash Cobain stuff. I mean, it literally makes Sexy Red sound like Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it,
I, And Ice Spice shows up on this.
And Ice Spice comes and...
And comes to their level. Yes. Like, doesn't take it to an Ice Spice place. Like, takes it... She shows up in their house.
Yeah.
And plays by their rules. And the thing about Ice Spice that I think is going to ensure that she has a long career, this is a Drake move, right?
Right.
This is like, I'm identifying a thing that's bubbling. I can add something to it. It can add something to me. I think a very savvy thing
on their end,
very
too,
savvy,
because this song has been going for so long now, but still picking up steam. And Ice Spice is the thing that, again, like we keep talking about summer. It's a hot day today, despite what I'm wearing. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like we're getting there and we need to make sure that this is the Hot 97 record all summer long.
I do want to add one thing about Cash Cobain, which I've been thinking about a lot, and Sexy Jerome more broadly. And it took this song to crystallize the idea. It reminds me a lot of speed garage into early UK garage.
Okay.
Like a sexualized adjacent thing to a tougher sound. And it reminds me a lot of these kind of like 97, 98, 99 records. Like when I was living in London.
Drink.
It reminds me a little bit of those songs, yes, of those songs that were coming out during, I guess, more 90, 98 into 99, 2000, from Sweet Like Chocolate, like basically leading up to So Solid Crew, but like not getting there quite yet. But Craig David, in a way, like obviously Craig David being the very pop version of it, but someone taking this kind of like up-tempo, frisky but
club.
Still club but still street adjacent right. sound and imposing artful romantic melodies on top of it. The more I listen to Cash Cobain, I think sometimes when I listen to Cash Cobain stuff, I'm hearing the lewdness of it. I'm not necessarily hearing the melody of it. I'm hearing the content, and I'm also hearing the pattern of the drums. Mm-hmm. I started to hear it a little bit differently, maybe hearing a female voice on it forced me to hear it differently, but I started going back to older stuff and I was like, huh, I wonder if this is a version of kind of like 98 speed garage, 99 speed garage into UK garage becoming very big pop. It's the closest analog I can think of. It doesn't feel like it has an obvious analog in American hip hop or American R&B. Just a thought.
We'll see if it works.
Yeah. Did you know what Danimals was?
I did. I did not know. This is again, a micro-generational, maybe pure generational.
Yeah, it was a pure generational.
Smack. We're not going to get to the Danimals line here, but if you want to go hear the X-rated version of this song, you can do it. We'll play the beginning of the Ice Spice verse, which is mercifully clean. For sure.
Got an attitude, but I'm feeling this, so I ain't mad at you. And I'm tired of two, and it's fatter too. I'm your baddest boo. So what you about to do? Top one baddie in a jetty move. And my ass fat because I eat my oats and my vegetables.
Also, some bubbling.
Mm-hmm.
Bubbly.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to talk about Shaboozy.
Mm-hmm.
And for a couple reasons. One, during the Beyonce episode, there's a little bit of Shaboozy slander.
Yeah, or we just sort of brushed it off. We said he wasn't ready to be on a Beyonce album yet.
And that may be true. I also think that was not the best. Now that I've listened to a whole bunch, I don't know if that was the best Shaboozy stuff.
It wasn't the best showcase for what he does necessarily.
No. So for the last couple of weeks, and I think it's growing, Shaboozy has had a song. It's called A Bar Song, parenthetical, Tipsy.
Mm-hmm. What's Tipsy, John?
Jaquan. You were there, you were there. Jaquan had a record called Tipsy. This was in
2004.
Is it 04?
I think 20 years.
Okay. Yeah.
This is a thing that I don't think Tipsy ever went away. I think your Jaquan is always your Jaquan, you know? Like, I think kids of
all
ages.
Dog, I am old. I can't believe Tipsy is 20 years old.
I think
out of control.
Kids of all ages know Tipsy. I think it never became vintage.
No. And also, Tipsy has one of the most neck-cracking beats of all time. Like, if you think Clips Grindin', if that's your, like, ne plus ultra of neck-snapping beat, Tipsy takes Grindin' and cracks it in two and, like, throws it on the ground.
Right. And wouldn't exist without Grindin'.
No, of course, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It is somehow more potent. And it is...
You're on the record with that?
Yeah.
Tipsy more potent than grinding.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I really do think that. I really do think that. No shots on my good friends, the Clips, but like Tipsy to me, there's so much more, the space in it feels so much more portentous. Mm-hmm. Grinding is like, there's a groove in grinding, and Tipsy, it's like, it's just, you feel like stomping and feel the,
it's like,
the
but it's
tension
like
in between
it's
the noises.
Dumber Neptunes.
Yeah, it's fine. Wait, great.
And you, and then we get to shoot, and then we get to shoot the bar song.
Okay. So this is a, well, you said earlier it's a Hozier song.
Yeah, this is like no stomp. This is stomp clap music more than it's even country or rap song.
Yes.
It's like, it's, I think we don't get the rise of the song without Stick Season.
I think that's totally, that's totally
like this
fair.
Fits in that mold.
Also, and to pick up a little bit on the Tipsy itself and grinding conversation, on regular podcast, Marcus Dowling from the Tennessean was talking about early Shaboozy, and he brought up the first Shaboozy song, I think it was called Jeff Gordon, which I had not heard. Mm-hmm. I went to go listen to it. Have you listened to it? Okay.
I remember when it was bubbling.
It's OG Mako. Yeah. It's you guessed it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that a guy who was doing that 10 years ago is now doing this. So this is pretty catchy.
It's catchy because Tipsy's catchy.
Yeah, it's also like, even like the opening
verse, he hit something. It
here.
Evolves Tipsy a little bit.
Yes. This is something we haven't directly addressed, but the way that country has tried to reconcile with hip hop, obviously we've talked about it a bunch over the years, but in the immediate short term past, there have been a couple of things that really stuck out to me as like country just saying, you know what? We're all in the same gang. One is Hardy covering quote unquote Gin and Juice for like some Snoop liquor company.
Fine.
Also not that good. But and it's rewritten, obviously, but like basically covering Gin and Juice. The other thing that I want to play just for a second is a song called 90s Rap Mashup, which is by a guy named Austin Williams. Wake up, it's the first of the month. Get up, everybody saying, give me two pairs, cause I need two pairs so I can get the stomping in my Air Force Ones. Get stomping in my Air Force Ones, saying Colt 45 and two zigzags. Baby, that's all we need. Austin Williams, I think he's maybe 19, maybe he's 20. And this song, I actually like to see the songwriting credits on this song.
How does the publishing work?
Yeah, I'm really curious about this. Because it strings together lyrics and hooks from, let's say, 8 or 9 well-known rap songs, some of which are from the 2000s, not the 90s.
Right.
But, you know, it's like allusions to Nelly and No Limit Soldiers and et cetera, City High, I think, in there somewhere. It is the most kind of like, you know these songs, and I'm going to bring it into a country milieu. Now, that song didn't take off quite like I thought it might take off. It seemed like really low-hanging fruit. But I do think things like that help set the table for what Shaboozy is doing. Now, this song is probably going to be somewhat of a big hit.
Yeah.
I also saw on TikTok Shaboozy coming out with the Chainsmokers the other day.
I mean, he's so doing like everything. It's, like, it's going. He also did a From the Block of Tipsy.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, they did a From the Block performance of
Amazing.
Bar Song.
Yeah. So this is going to be, I think, relatively inescapable this summer as well.
Let's play the
From the Block.
Yeah,
let's go. Someone pour me up a double shot of whiskey. They know me and Jack Daniels got a history. There's a party downtown near Fifth Street. Everybody at the bar getting tipsy. Everybody at the bar getting tipsy. Everybody at the bar getting tipsy. An unexpectedly active week. Another thing that happened that week is friend of the pod, Shad D'Souza, visited New York. So for our snack segment, our Popcast Deluxe snack segment, Shad, he trafficked in.
Yeah, he dropped off some snacks, which is happening more and more. We love it.
The pack is dropping.
We love it. If we're friends and you have access to foreign exotics, get them to my desk and we'll try them on the show.
So Shad via Karen dropped off. These are Australian, I believe. Arnott's Shapes Originals. These are flavored crackers.
Okay.
Oven baked, not fried.
Okay.
Three flavors, pizza, barbecue, and...
Say it.
I don't want to.
Say it.
Mini chicken crimpy.
Neither of us know what chicken crimpy is. We're going to find out.
Also, on the package, it has a picture of the cracker and says, flavor you can see, which is actually not a sales pitch. Like, that's actually... right. I would maybe rather not see the flavor. Here, you want to start?
Yeah, to me, these were packaged like, thank you. These were packaged like, they look like combos. Maybe it's just the pizza flavor. Mm-hmm. They're not round. They're not cylindrical like a combo, but they look like they might be scratching the same itch as an American combo. But
which I don't like, for the record.
You don't? I'm surprised.
No, that like fake cheese in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah, right, I love a fake cheese. That's a disgusting.
They're also in like a squat bag, like they're like oyster crackers or something.
Yeah, this is like school lunch size.
Yeah, these are for children, as are most of the snacks that we try.
All right,
here
so
on Popcast.
You want to try that?
I got
first?
Pizza.
Okay, I'll start with. We're saving
chicken crimpy.
All right, barbecue smells horrendous.
Pizza smells like fake pizza.
This literally,
it's like Lunchables. Yeah, in the same way you don't know what Danimals is, you don't know what Lunchables are.
I know what Lunchables are,
but you didn't ever have
one. I never had one, no.
It's a sturdy cracker. These have the structure that could hold a dip, which I like.
Is this a snack?
As opposed to what, a meal? Like,
a snack is supposed to be joyful.
I like this. I like how browned they are. They're like, some of them are a little well done. You know how you can buy the only well done Cheez-Its? No, like you get a box of Cheez-Its and some of them are cooked a little darker than the Tadig
of the Cheez-Its.
Yeah, and now you can buy the all well done ones. Like that's, some of these have that. Mm. Oh yeah, these are great. These are good. I like these.
No, these are like,
they're beautiful. The flavor powder.
Are you just being nice to Shad?
No. I'm starting to think you don't really like snacks.
Just in general?
Yeah.
I just don't think this flavor is very convincing.
It's super artificial, but in a recognizable way.
Disgusting. Okay.
I like this as a side dish. It's not a main snack, but I like it as a side dish.
Forgive me. I know this is gonna sound terrible, but these don't taste American.
And that is true.
They don't taste American at all. Now we're gonna have the mini chicken crimpy. These are more like Ritz in shape.
Oh, interesting. Oh yeah, they're ovals, whereas the other ones were like.
Oh, they smell like chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Extremely artificial, but I like it.
It's like you took a Ritz and you dunked it in the powder for chicken ramen.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Also, like, you could put this in a tomato soup. It would really hit.
Or not.
These are good. The chicken are the best.
By far the best. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take one more.
Yeah, you like these, huh? Even though they're dry. I'm gonna say 8 on the chicken, and I'll do a 6.5 each on the pizza and the barbecue. But overall, I think these are versatile. Again, I wouldn't necessarily want them on their own, but like pick up a little soft cheese dip or something in a soup. Like I could see using these.
I'm gonna go 7 on the chicken. It's by far the best of the three that has that like kind of like tang, that like I don't know if it's acidity or whatever it is. It has like a tiny bit of sharpness that I don't like, but I think the cracker is substantive. I like how it chews. I like how it gets thick and almost concrete like when it chews. And I feel like the flavor persists. Mm-hmm. I really don't like the flavor on either of the other two. The crackers are good. They are a little bit more like truly baked than these.
Yeah.
I'm going to say pizza 5, barbecue 3.5.
Okay.
That was tough.
Interesting snack overall, though. I'm glad we tried it.
Again, not American.
Yeah.
like this, where would you even, like, what aisle would this be in?
It would be next to the Wheat Thins,
I guess, but like,
but it wouldn't sell.
Definitely not. That's our show. YouTube.com/podcast, subscribe and like. Every week, Joe and I sitting here on couches. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast, and we'll be back next week.